Foot had an APB on a 125-pound barefoot man dressed in a bathrobe. "You know, I leave you two alone for 5 fucking minutes." Vic was giving us a tongue-lashing as we hustled through the reception area. She snatched our radios from the charging station beside Ruby's desk and handed them around. Ruby turned in her chair and looked at us with her phone receiver in hand. "Mrs. Dobbs wants to know if those clothes were the ones that Ozzy wanted." I waved her off and continued down the steps with my two deputies flanking each side. "Tell her we'll get back to her." We blew through the doors and into a black glass wall of snow. I looked at the time and temperature on the Durant Federal sign across the street and noticed we'd warmed up to 3 degrees and that it was 4:45. He couldn't have gone far barefoot. We circled to the right and the open window. We hadn't bothered with bars since it was so small and high up, and because I was practically the only one who used the shower. How in the hell did he get through that? I shot a look at her. Determination. There was a wallowed-out spot in the snow where Ozzy had landed, and a clear set of footprints leading diagonally across the lawn toward the back door of the courthouse. The assessor's office was immediately to the right with a recessed room for their maps, and there were two sets of stairs that led to the courtroom above, one to the right and one to the left. The county clerk's office was down the hall, and the treasurer's counter was opposite to the right with a set of glass doors leading out to Main Street. I looked up the steps. If I was running around town with no shoes, a bathrobe, and a constitution like a hummingbird, I might stay inside, but that's just me. Sazer Pretoria leaped up the staircase and in a second was gone. Vic disappeared into the maze of the assessor's rooms, and I continued down the hall to the long counter in front of the treasurer's office. There were lots of mimeographed slogans and pithy remarks taped to the wall. "If you don't like the service, leave," or "Procrastination on your part does not constitute a panic on ours." The signs were exemplary of the Absaroka County tax mob's attitudes toward uncivil service. The usually garrulous ladies were standing at their desks and chatting like birds on a wire. "Sorry to interrupt, but have you seen a man in a bathrobe run by here?" Trudy Thorburn, a diminutive blonde, pointed.
"He went that away, Walt."
"Thank you." I placed the ends of a thumb and middle finger in my mouth and whistled, loud enough to rattle the lights that hung from the ceiling. "When my deputies get here, send them after me." I plunged back into the cold and looked for prints, but the sidewalks had been cleared and salted, so it was impossible to discern any. I could hear someone coming up behind me and turned to see Sizer Pretoria at the top of the steps. He wasn't even breathing hard. Vic arrived, and I spelled out the plan. "Sancho, head back up the hill. Vic and I will split Maine. I don't think he's dangerous, but if you spot him, hit the radio." We split up. Vic crossed the street to the office barbershop, Crazy Woman bookstore, and Margot's Pottery, any of which would have been an esoteric choice for a man in a bathrobe. As I carefully picked my way along the icy sidewalk, I couldn't help but wonder what on earth Ozzy thought he was doing. Whatever the charges, it wasn't going to look good that he'd escaped from custody, no matter how ludicrous that escape was. I bypassed the engineering firm and the office, as they had already closed for the day, and ducked my head in the lobby of the Owen Wister Hotel. The dark-haired young woman who was seated at the table closest to the door was rolling silverware into napkins and looked up. "Hi, Walt." "Hi, Rachel. Have you seen a guy in a bathrobe run by here?" She made a face.
"Ozzy Dobbs?"
"Where?" She placed the roll of silverware on the table and considered me.
"He came in the door a few minutes ago and asked if he could use the phone there at the reception stand."
"Long distance or local?" She smirked at me.
"And how would I know that?"
"How many numbers did he dial?"
She glanced sideways and thought, "Local."
"Anybody use it after Ozzy?"
"No."
I studied the plastic phone. "This thing got a redial on it?"
"Yes."
"Hit it and write down the number and hang up. When one of my deputies gets here, give it to them."
"Okay."
"Thanks." I started to go, but stuck my head back in and pointed a finger at her. "And stop sliding sideways on my main street." I continued on to the busy bee and paused on the sidewalk to look in the windows. There was an elderly couple sharing coffee at one of the tables, and Dorothy was holding a pot behind the counter, but other than that, the place was empty. I waved and continued across the Clear Creek Bridge, tried the door at the Ayuscaddy Hotel, but it was locked. The copper front had closed, but the sports stop was still open. Dave looked up from the cash register, his owl-like eyes peering over his glasses.
"I don't suppose you're looking for Ozzy Dobbs?"
I made it to the counter in 3 steps. Where?
Bought a parka, a pair of hiking boots, and a Steger 20-gauge coach gun with a box of shells.
He threw a thumb toward the rear of the store.
And lit out for the territories.
You sold a barefoot man in a bathrobe a shotgun? His eyes focused as the humor of the situation died.
There's no law against that, is there?
I dodged a few clothes racks and strode through the ski equipment in the direction of the back door.
What did he buy that stuff with?
The man's rich, so I figured his credit is good. He was yelling now.
Was I wrong about that?
We were playing a different game now. In whatever deranged state Ozzy was, he was armed now. I unsnapped my .45 Colt. I came out the back of the sporting goods store into one of the few alleys we had in Durant, and I started having bad thoughts about the last time I'd been in an alley and about headless Philadelphia assistant district attorneys, but quickly ushered those memories out of my mind. There were a few abandoned garages just off Main Street and a boot repair place, but nowhere I thought Ozzy might hole up. I studied the tracks and could see where a new set of hiking boot prints crossed the street, went between two of the garages, and on toward the Little League field and the city park. I plucked the radio from my belt and turned it on, something I'd forgotten to do when I'd taken the thing. It squawked.
"And if you don't tell us where you are right now, the first person I am going to shoot is you."
I keyed the mic. "I'm behind the sports stop, headed over to the ball field. Tell Sancho to go get his unit, stop in at the Owen Wister, and pick up a phone number from Rachel Terry. You can both meet me at the corner near the grandstand or over in the park by the public pool. And in other news, he's now armed."
Static. "What?"
"He bought a 20-gauge coach gun and shells in his detour through the sports stop."
Static. "Jesus, only in Wyoming."
I punched the button.
"Did you get that, Sancho? He's armed."
Static.
"Got it. You want me to skip the Owen Wister?"
"No, he can't be that far ahead of me, and I refuse to believe he's dangerous to anybody but us."
Static. "That's a fucking comforting thought."
I returned the radio to my belt as Vic's voice went silent, assured that my kindly and courteous backup was on the way. He'd skirted the field and crossed the street into the park. I followed the chain-link fence that surrounded the Olympic-sized pool that had been drained for the winter, and then the tracks disappeared. I plucked the radio from my belt and keyed the mic again.
"Vic?"
Static.
"I'm at the ball field. Which way did you go?"
"I'm across, past the pool on the Clear Creek Trail. Have Sancho drive around to the other side of the park and check Fetterman and the stage trail." Santiago's voice broke in.
"Static. I'm getting the number now, and then I'll head over. You want me to just keep circling?"
"Yep." There was a drivable bridge to my right, but something led me straight ahead. The public bathrooms were also to my right. But there were no fresh tracks. It had started to snow more heavily now, which figured, and it was like I was in one of those globes. I walked past the horseshoe pits and tried to see if there was a spot where he might have veered off, but the only prints I saw leading into the trees were those of a few loose dogs. I figured if Ozzy had called somebody to pick him up, they'd be on the other side of the park. Obviously his mother wasn't a part of the escape. Hell, she wanted him in prison. Who else was there, and why the shotgun? If he hadn't called someone to give him a ride, who had he called and why? The banks of the creek had intricate, serrated shelves where the center of the stream had opened up to the rushing water below and held dripping stalactites like those in caves. The openings were large enough for a man to fall into, but he'd have to try. I knew because I had about a year ago. The closer you got to the water, the louder the water became, but other than that, the place was silent. There was no one braving the absolute cold of the park, and besides, within 15 minutes, it would be completely dark. My hand automatically went to my belt, but I guess I'd left my maglight on the seat of the truck. The old-fashioned streetlights helped brighten the falling snow, but not much else. They were placed around a protected picnic area that led to a large footbridge which angled between a playground and a daycare center. I picked up his prints in their light. It looked as if he hadn't hesitated and had crossed the bridge toward Klondike Drive and the portion of town that stretched along Highway 16 west and up the mountain. I hurried and crossed the bridge, pulled the radio from my belt, and hit the button.
"Vic?"
Static.
"Yeah."
"When you get across the bridge, head right and check out the area around the daycare. I don't think he went that way, but I want to be sure."
Static. "Got it."
There was a 5-inch layer of snow on the swings that silently shifted in the slight wind, and I tried to think of something more depressing
than empty playgrounds in the middle of winter, but couldn't come up with anything. The tracks continued toward the Clear Creek walking path that wound its way west past the old Wyoming Railroad locomotive that used to chug out past my place between the World Wars. An extension of Washington Park, the Greenway was about 12 miles in length and not as cultivated as the part in town. As I started to cross the street, I saw the Basco roaring up the hill on Klondike. I stopped at the side of the road and waited for Sizer Batoria's vehicle to slide to a stop in front of me. He rolled the window down and looked up. I called the number into Ruby, and she indexed it with Quest. It's the public phone in the bar out of the bypass truck stop. That means it's probably somebody on the move. I nodded and glanced over the roof of the car. I think Ozzie took to the walking path. He peered through the passenger side window of his unit. Why the hell would he go there? What's he think he's doing, going bird hunting? I studied the dark path, not with a coach gun. Sancho started to unbuckle his seatbelt, but it was with a certain amount of trepidation. You want to trade off and I'll follow him up the trail?
No.
I rested a hand on the sill and extended my other one. You got your flashlight? I think I left mine in the trunk.
Yeah.
He pulled it from the lodged location in the crack of the bench seat and handed it to me, a 2-cell. Hell, I even shortchanged the kid on his flashlight. Thanks. You head up Klondike here and take a right on Clear Creek Road. It follows the trail, and you can use your spotlight. Just don't drive off the ridge and into the water. He didn't smile.
I won't.
The Basco sprayed a little ice as he departed and headed left up the other hill. He slowed at the ridge, and I watched as he focused the spotlight into the trees ahead of me. It wasn't like I was going to sneak up on anyone. There was a phalanx of signs listing the rules for walking the pathway, the most important being no horses or unleashed dogs. It didn't say anything about shotguns. I walked between the concrete posts that marked the beginning of the greenway and started up the trail less traveled. There was a mitten that someone had found stuck on a branch with its palm facing me like a traffic cop. Stop, go no farther. I clicked on the flashlight, scanned the surrounding area, and saw a set of hiking boot prints leading straight up the middle of the path. I kicked off on my sore foot and ignored the ache from my bite wound. The path was marked by small red posts at every tenth of a mile, and as I got to the first one, my radio crackled. Vic's voice was so clear in the Arctic-like air that it sounded as if she were standing beside me. Static. Walt? I held the radio up to my face as I walked, the clouds of my breath freezing in the air and blocking my view momentarily.
Yep.
Static. I checked the building, but all but one of the kids were already gone. The lady in charge said that nobody in a bathrobe had come by, and that with the amount of parents coming and going, there was no way he could have gotten near the place without being seen. I thumbed the button. It was a long shot, but I just wanted to be sure. Static. Where are you? I'm on the extended walking path beside the creek. Sancho's flanking on Clear Creek Road. I've got shallow boot prints in the snow, and I think it's him.
Static. Wait for me. I'm on my way.
That's okay. I'm already a tenth of a mile in, so I'll keep going. I'm moving slow, and you'll catch up.
Static. Walt, I know he's been pretty harmless, well, other than trying to beat another man to death with a pitching wedge, but now he's armed.
You worried about me? I couldn't help but smile as I listened to the jostling of her radio as she ran.
Static. Yes, asshole, I have this image of you walking up to Tweedledum and saying hi as he blows your guts around your spine.
I'll be careful.
Static. You suck.
I clipped the radio to my belt and continued following the tracks. Leafless trees bowered over the path, and it looked more and more like some fairy tale. There was no wind, and now the only sound besides the rushing of the creek was the distant motor of Sancho's unit and the soft clicking of his emergency lights as he made his way along the ridge above. He was a little ways ahead, and I could see the sweeping spotlight working its way back and forth from across the creek bed to where the pathway rose and then disappeared. There was a bench at the top of the hill, and it looked like Ozzie had veered toward it and even stood beside it for a moment before he went on. The trail became open to the right, and with the glow of the dusk-till-dawn lights on Fetterman Street, I could see the old sports field. His tracks led me south where the cottonwood trees loitered near the creek. The path remained on the ridge and would actually meander through foothills for another 7 miles past the old power plant, finally ending at Mosier Gulch. There was a picnic area there, and it was accessible from the main road, so he could be using that as a rendezvous. Still, Turkey Lane was closer. I pulled the radio from my belt again and keyed the mic. Sancho? I watched as the spotlight stopped moving up ahead. Static. Yeah. Have you seen anything yet? Static. No. Turn around and head back over to Fort Street and get out to Turkey Lane. If he's meeting somebody, I think that's the place. Static. Where the hell is that? Left at the trailer park. Static. What if he crosses the creek and climbs the hill? He doesn't have a flashlight, so I don't think he's going to get off the trail. I can barely see where I'm going with one. The snow was picking up again, and with the dry cold, it was like walking in an ocean of snowy dust bunnies, with little puffs of frozen humidity rising from the path every time my boots hit the ground. There were a few juniper bushes and stands of choke cherry under which was another bench. Ozzy's tracks led to it, but again he hadn't stopped, 5 inches deep and undisturbed. Was Ozzy looking for someone on the trail? And why was he stopping at every bench? And why the shotgun? "Do you know it's already 10 degrees below fucking zero?" Vic had caught up. She was holding something in her hands. "What are you holding?"
"The ladies at the daycare like you and thought we might enjoy some coffee during our cold pursuit."
I cracked the plastic top on the to-go cup. It smelled really good and the warmth was intoxicating. Very thoughtful of them. We walked on at an accelerated pace, pausing infrequently to sip our coffees. I wanted to find Ozzy as quickly as possible, but I also didn't want to walk past him in the dark. Vic's flashlight prowled the brush to our right as I played mine over the bank leading down to Clear Creek, but Ozzy's tracks didn't veer from the walking path.
"I'm going to kill that little fucker when we find him. I'm freezing my ass off out here."
"You should have worn your fur hat."
"Yeah, well, I didn't think I was going to be hiking to the Donner Pass."
She slowed and sipped from her cup. I did the same.
"He bought a shotgun in his bathrobe?"
I reattached my lid as we continued on, along with a parka and a pair of hiking boots.
"What in the hell?"
"My thoughts exactly. I can't wait to ask him." I studied her upturned face and saw she was looking at a brief split in the clouds that revealed a half moon.
"Is it supposed to warm up soon, say, turn of the century?"
"Nope, this cold front is supposed to settle in, and today was the high from now through the weekend."
"3?
"Yep.
I quit, too, and I'm moving to a place where the temperature is in double digits."
Both our radios crackled at once. Static.
"Boss, you there?"
I pulled mine from my belt.
"Yep." Static. "There's nobody here."
"Tracks?"
Static.
"Nope." "Well, you're our stopgap. Shut your lights down and see if anybody shows up, either from the road or the trail."
Static. "Roger that."
Vic sipped her coffee as she walked. A Pyrrhic victory.
"What kind of shotgun?"
20-gauge coach gun.
"Why in the hell would he buy something like that?"
"Only thing that would fit under his bathrobe." I shrugged and tried drinking from my cup as we walked, but only succeeded in dribbling it on my coat. "I'd say he's afraid of something."
"Afraid of what?"
I recapped my coffee. "I'm not sure, but my mind would rest a lot easier if I thought it was us." She stopped.
"Do you see that?"
I directed my flashlight beam along with hers. Someone was sitting on the bench ahead of us in a new North Face parka with a bathrobe that hung down to where a naked pair of legs bloomed from a pair of hiking boots with no socks. I slowed as I came up beside him with my hand on my sidearm and the beam of the flashlight directly on his face. Vic held to the side with her hand on her Glock. From all outward appearances, the shotgun on his lap was loaded, and the remainder of the shells lay spilled in his lap. "Ozzy, if you shoot me, I am going to be very disappointed in you." He didn't answer, and he didn't move. I kept the light on his face and noticed that his eyes were open, his jaw was lax, and a strand of spittle dripped from his mouth and hung from his chin like frozen spun glass. I stepped closer. His eyes were unfocused, and the liquid in them was already beginning to freeze. I continued around him and could see the burnt spot and the small amount of frozen blood where someone had pressed a medium-caliber handgun to his chest and shot him directly in the heart. I sighed.
Vic's voice came from behind me. Happy Valentine's Day. Chapter 10
A 32.
Vic sipped her coffee. We had a contract hit in Philadelphia where some poor bastard rode around on a SEPTA line train for 8 hours before somebody figured out he was dead. I nodded philosophically. When in Rome. Bill shrugged. I'll know more when I get into Billings. The size of the barrel is usually indicated by the corona of soot, but if they used a silencer, which I'm assuming they did, the diameter might be affected. The conversation was bringing on another of my headaches. Anything else? The wound was pinkish in color due to carbon monoxide produced by the proximity of the weapon. I sipped my own coffee. It was the morning for it. So there really isn't any doubt that this was up close and personal. The young man smiled, the half-smile he used when he had to tell me things I didn't want to hear.
Not in my mind. What were the tracks like?
I'm bringing my expert in this morning. He was up on the res, checking on the progress of getting his pipes thawed and trying to get permission for Katie's wedding. McDermott smiled with his whole mouth.
Well, if anybody can get it done.
I nodded as Dorothy brought over the pot and refilled our mugs and picked up our dishes and the detritus and debris of our food.
You three going to want anything else?
I smiled up at her, thankful that she allowed us the back corner table for my indelicate forensic evaluations. It wasn't lost on me that this was the table where Ozzie and I had sat before. Vic answered for the group.
I think we're good.
Dorothy set the check down between us and glanced at Bill McDermott as I picked it up.
I'd be careful. Bad things happen to people who eat with this guy.
He watched her carry the coffee pot, along with our primary and ancillary dishes, back behind the counter.
Is everybody in this county a smartass?
My deputy sipped her coffee.
Pretty much.
He studied me for a few seconds more and switched back to the subject at hand.
Often in these situations there's a mark on the victim where the killer has held the individual while shooting them. I'll keep an eye out for anything, but I swear it looks like somebody just walked right up to him and shot him in the heart.
A professional killer in northern Wyoming? Doesn't make much sense, does it? I studied the patterns of ice frozen in the low spots of the steps as we continued up. And why would a hired killer shoot somebody like Ozzie Dobbs? She didn't say anything, probably attempting to keep as much of the warm air from the busy bee in her lungs until we got back to the office. She tucked her face down into the upturned fur of her jacket. We got to the office and I stopped. She paused on the steps and turned to look at me through the V-shaped aperture between her collar and her ball cap.
What, you're going for a walk? It's fucking 10 degrees below zero.
I looked across the street at the bank sign again, which told me the exact temperature, 7 degrees below zero, and time, 9:05 a.m. I need some information. My mother had purchased a United States savings bond from Durand Federal for me when I was a child, and I still did all my banking there. I had my late wife's trust instrument for my daughter, a checking account, a savings account, and a money market account that probably now had about as much in it as the saving bond's face value. Uh-oh, have we been robbed? Since we'd started using direct deposit a few years back, I'd hardly ever set foot in the bank itself and was a little surprised at how much it had changed. John Mickey was the president. Hell, I remembered when he'd been a teller at the drive-thru. He was a handsome fellow, tall and tanned, with silver hair, an easy smile, and a ready disposition. I stuck my hand in his. Anything you can do about that sign of yours outside? People are getting grouchy, it's been so cold. He smiled a smile with perfect teeth. They should go to Belize.
That where you've been?
Yeah, Michelle and I have been going down there this time of the year for about 3 years now. I noticed he didn't let go of my hand.
Walt, can I talk to you for a minute?
Sure. He let go, and I followed him past the tellers to the back corner of the bank. His office was the one with the best view of the bighorns and was nicely decorated with a few paintings by local artists. I sat as he shut the door behind us and came around, sitting at his desk. Walt, I've been meaning to talk to you about your daughter's trust fund.
Something wrong?
No, nothing like that. In fact, it's doing incredibly well, especially considering the economy. I just thought it might be time to do something else with the money. Martha's trust expires when Katie turns 30, and I was just wondering, as one of the executors, if she...